The opinions expressed in the Spirited Sports Podcast are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to Spirited Sports. Tolly Kakaletris, Nick DiCicco, Elias Drakos, and many more break down the biggest moments, game-changing plays, and the stories behind the athletes. Whether you live for the thrill of victory, the hustle of the underdog, or just love a great sports conversation, you're in the right place. This is Spirited Sports.
Hello, everybody. How's it going? And welcome back to another episode of Spirited Sports. How's everybody feeling as we get into episode number 91? Nick, Elias, and Tolly, alongside Todd and Steven. How's everybody feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm ready to go here, Nick.
Todd, how you feeling? You ready to go?
Feeling pretty good. We have a lot of exciting topics to talk about today, so it's going to be good.
Just like always.
Yep.
All right, let's dive in. Let's start off in the NBA. Today, let's start off with some history potentially tonight with a certain Thunder star. Todd, you want to start us off?
Of course. Let's talk about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. One of the best players in the NBA, probably top two player in the league. Reigning MVP, reigning Western Conference Finals MVP, reigning NBA Finals MVP, basically reigning everything. He's won every award last year, and this year he's having another incredible season, averaging over 30 points a game. And tonight against the Boston Celtics, SGA has a chance to break a record. If he scores at least 20 points, it will be the 127th straight time that SGA scored at least 20 points in the game, which would break the NBA record, which was set by Wilt Chamberlain back in 1963. So a very long record, 63-year record could be broken tonight by SGA having another incredible season for the NBA leading Oklahoma City Thunder.
Can we just talk about how incredible this feat is? 127 straight games of 20 plus points.
Well, if he gets it, he's tied.
He's going to get it.
Looking at the points here, right, throughout this streak, he's only scored fewer than 21 points five times.
Wow.
So he's had over 22 points the rest of the way.
That's crazy.
And he's so effective, too.
Absolutely.
You look at the way he plays, too, as a guard. He dominates by rarely shooting threes, instead leading the league in drives and scoring with an like old-school, like efficient mid-range game. He's at the line all the time. He's at the line because he's so explosive. The way he plays, people are forced to foul him.
Exactly.
So it's a testament to how great of a player SGA is.
I just want to talk about the streak itself. Something that a streak from Wilt Chamberlain, one of the greatest of all time. We all know the other incredible feat that he had, the 100-point game, which we'll talk about in a bit. But like this record has stood for 63 years.
Yeah.
Something that many people would have thought was untouchable. Streaks that were untouchable, right? And we're seeing twice this week in the NBA that streaks are coming close. Coming close.
Yeah, it's pretty
right?
crazy.
Again, these streaks that we think, oh, no one's going to reach that. No one's going to reach that. No one thought Ovechkin was going to reach Gretzky. No one thought Gretzky's goal total was going to be broken.
Someone's going to hit 100 for sure one day.
You think so?
We're talking one day, like, you know, so many years ahead.
I agree.
You never know. And let's face it, Bam just hit, 83, which we'll get into in a second. But who's to say someone can hit 100?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do I think, like, if someone hits it or like, surpasses it, they'll, like, just, like, it'll be, like, 100, 101, around there. But, I mean, who's to say?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Bam Adebayo and him joining some elite Miami Heat company with Dwayne Wade as the only 10,000-point scorers. Take it away.
Todd?
Yeah, Bam Adebayo, obviously making history there for the Heat, and like it's really impressive, right? Like you think about, it, there's a lot of amazing players that play for the Heat. Obviously, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, even in the '90s, Alonzo Mourning, Tim Hardaway, a lot of great players that play for the Heat. Jimmy Butler as well. So for Bam Adebayo to do that, pretty impressive. But not as impressive, I guess you could say, as what he did during his last game.
And also, I mean, quick shout out to D Wade. What a career as well, right? Like, at one point, that LeBron, D Wade.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like very few and far between, I would say, in the history of professional basketball. Has there ever been and will there ever be a 1-2 punch like that? So, Todd, you kind of cued it. So go ahead.
Yeah. So on Tuesday night, Bam Adebayo did something that hasn't been done in 20 years, which is an NBA player scoring at least 80 points in a game. He scored 83 against the Washington Wizards. The Heat won that game over the Wizards at home there. And yeah, it was pretty crazy to see Adebayo do that. I'm not sure about you guys, but if I were to guess which player would score 80 points, it wouldn't have been Bam Adebayo, who's more known for his defense and also has one of the best passing big men in the league as well. And sure, he's a solid scorer. I think coming to the game, he had been averaging like 18 points. Now it's 20 because he scored 83 points in the game. But for him to do that is, I don't know, very impressive to me. In my opinion, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, an absolutely incredible feat for someone that isn't necessarily known for his offensive prowess. You know, Bam Adebayo is known more for his defense, right?
Yeah.
So just having him have go off one night to score 83 points.
That's crazy because for two decades, I mean, Bryant's 2006 masterclass against the Toronto Raptors stood as the kind of like the modern gold standard of individual scoring. And many believe that that record would remain untouched in an era, especially of sophisticated defensive schemes in basketball, right? We're not seeing offense like this in modern day history, unlike in the era of Wilt Chamberlain and Kobe Bryant. So to think that this record was broken in modern day basketball is pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Todd, which is more impressive for you, Wilt in that era or Bam in this era?
Honestly, I would say Bam, just because Wilt back in that era, like, because Wilt was, what, 7'1"? Like, he was pretty tall. And, you know, he was playing against players who were a lot shorter. You know, Bam Adebayo is playing against, you know, like, players that are taller than him. Like, the Wizards have, you know, a guy named, with the name of Will Riley, who's a Canadian rookie in the NBA. And they have some guy, Alex Saar, in his second year. He's, like, 7'1" or so. So they have, like, taller players to match up against Bam. So for him to score 83 is, in my opinion, more impressive. Obviously, Wilt scoring 100 is really impressive, too.
I got Bam Adebayo. And that was a crazy, crazy performance, guys. Like, for that to happen on a random Tuesday in March, like, you wouldn't expect that to have happened, right? I opened up Instagram Tuesday night, and I was like, 83? And I thought it was fake for a second. And then you come to realize, wow, it's incredible. As for the free throw thing, I had someone text me about it. Because I texted someone, I was like, oh, Bam had 83, that's crazy. And he's like, well, 36 for free throws. And I'm like, you know, okay, I kind of like a little, I buy it a little bit, but at the same time, great players get fouled and go to the line and, you know, shoot those shots, those free throws. So it's like, you still have to work for them. It's not like earned, in my opinion. So I think it doesn't really take anything away from it. 83 is an incredible, incredible accomplishment. And as for your point about if someone's going to break the 100 point mark, why not? Maybe it'll happen.
Bam shooting all those free throws, but his true shooting percentage was 67%, which is really like good, really high. So I don't know. He had a pretty efficient game. So
just a quick shout out to our basketball correspondent, Krishna Dare, who spoke about this topic over Instagram and YouTube this week. So if you aren't subscribed to our YouTube and Instagram channel, make sure to check those out. But Krishna had a great point, and to say in terms of Wilt's 100-point record, it's really a matter of who and when. And he said that, as we saw tonight, it could literally be anyone.
Exactly. Yep. So, taking it from the court to the gridiron, Elias.
Kenneth Walker agrees to a record deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, did I expect that to happen? Yes, I expected it to happen. The Seahawks just could not afford to keep Kenneth Walker. And it's sad because Kenneth Walker is a great, great player. The MVP, I mean, it speaks for itself. But he got a three-year deal worth up to $45 million in Kansas City, which is a monster deal. He deserves the money. He's a tremendous, tremendous player. Seahawks lost him. Lost a couple other guys as well. But at the end of the day, it's going to make the Kansas City offense a lot better. Him and Patrick Mahomes, man, that's going to be a scary, scary duo, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's a really good move for the Chiefs. Like, you look at them, the running backs. They haven't had a running back record over 1,000 yards in a season since Kareem Hunt in 2017. That's a lot, pretty long time. So they've kind of been lacking really that explosive element from the running backs. So not getting Kenneth Walker, who's one of the most explosive running backs in the league. We saw it throughout the whole playoffs in the Super Bowl. Great pickup for the Chiefs and great for Kenneth Walker, you know, getting that payday that he deserves as well.
Yeah, you look at this signing for the Chiefs. I mean, Kenneth Walker, a walk-in for the Chiefs, and immediately boost an offense that struggled to generate meaningful gains on the ground outside of Patrick Mahomes' scrambles. I mean, look at Pacheco, Hunt, and Breshard Smith last year. They all failed to average better than 4 yards per carry last fall. So getting Walker for the Chiefs is massive, especially to establish that run game while Mahomes eases his way back into game action from tearing his ACL last season.
And now with Walker into the Chiefs system, Pacheco is out and he is signed with the Lions, a 1 year, $1.81 million deal with Detroit. And he will now back up the presumed number one, Jahmyr Gibbs in Detroit.
Todd, lead us out of Indianapolis. Actually, there's two topics we have here, but why don't you start off with the first one?
Yeah, so the Indianapolis Colts have made some moves in free agency, keeping their own. They've managed to re-sign Alec Pierce, their young star wide receiver, to a 4-year, $160 million contract. And they've also re-signed quarterback Daniel Jones to a record 2-year, $88 million contract. You know, the Colts last year, you know, we all remember them. They got off to an 8-2 start last season, and everyone was like, wow, this is crazy. And they were looking like real, like, potentially Super Bowl contenders, right? And then obviously they lost a couple of games, and then Daniel Jones unfortunately tore his Achilles, and that was kind of the end of their season. But I think these are two, I would say, good moves, especially the Alec Pierce move. I think is a really good move. I think he's one of the best young receivers in the league, just explosive, really good at winning down the field. The Daniel Jones contract, I think it's definitely risky, you know, getting a quarterback off a torn Achilles who, outside of last season, hasn't really proven to be consistent as a starter. But at the same time, they kind of had to do it, right? I mean, you look at the other quarterbacks available. I think Daniel Jones was probably the best guy they could probably get. Like maybe Kyler Murray, you could say. But, you know, obviously Daniel Jones knows the system, played well last year for them. So I hope, you know, he has a speedy recovery. And we'll see. The Colts are going to try to get back into, I guess, getting back to the level they were at last year. And, you know, they haven't won the division since 2014. So hopefully they can try to break that this year.
Yeah, well, looking at Alec Pierce and the contract he got, he's led the NFL in yards per catch the last two seasons. But last year, I'd say we saw a more refined version of Pierce as well. He surpassed 1,000 receiving yards for the first time and impacted each level of the field. Him being an all-around target for Daniel Jones is huge. And obviously, they didn't want to break up that offensive connection between the two with obviously early success last season before Jones got injured. And as in regards to the Daniel Jones contract, there's always going to be varying levels of risk when signing a player to a big contract. And those risks are potentially heightened with Jones, especially coming off an Achilles injury. But the Colts are obviously confident in his ability to bounce back. And we'll see how that plays out. And yeah, Jones was unbelievable for the Colts last year. And the deal feels like a win-win. Jones gets a good sized deal with guarantees. The Colts retain the quarterback they wanted all along, and while they are clearly committed to Jones in the short term, this being only a 2-year deal does give Indianapolis future flexibility. Tolly, what do you think?
6'3 frame. Pierce excels at winning 50-50 balls, often turning them into like 90-10 sort of situations. And also, Pierce rarely leaves the field, playing over 90% of snaps in many games. And he also led the NFL in yards per reception in 2024 and 2025. He became the first player since 1990 to have back-to-back seasons with 35-plus catches and 21-plus yards per reception. And last but not least, he achieved his first 1,000-yard season with 1,003 yards in 2025, despite playing in only 15 games, solidifying his status as a number one option. Dracos.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think both Alec Pierce and the Colts wanted this to happen. So it's a good deal, you know, 4 years, $116 million. He got paid. He got a lot of money for this deal.
Nick, what do you make of the Daniel Jones move? Honestly, like money-wise.
I think it just solidifies that they're all in with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, leading this team to an 8-2 start, as we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, I think it just, it goes to show that they're trust him. They're willing to go all in with him, and they just need to build some pieces around him, and they're ready to go.
You could tell they were all in with Jones last year, too, because of that monster trade deadline they had, acquiring Sauce Gardner from the Jets, giving them the first-round pick, right? So they're all in with this guy, and it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back this year.
Yep. Got it.
Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting with Daniel Jones, to be honest. Like, when he was with the Giants, outside of maybe the 1 year where he led them to the playoffs and they beat the Vikings, I wasn't so convinced on him. To be honest, but you know, to fit, there was so much that had to be done here for the Colts to fit Pierce under the cap. They had to trade Michael Pittman Jr. for a late draft pick. Then the focus turned to Jones, the number 6 overall draft pick in 2019, got the transition tag by Indy last week. He completed 68% of his throws last season for 3,101 yards, his highest total since leading the Giants to the playoffs in 2022. He also threw 19 touchdown passes, his highest total since 2019, and 8 interceptions. Todd, any other thoughts here on really anything regarding Indianapolis, the Colts?
Yeah, I mean, they're in my opinion, an interesting division, especially in the AFC South. You look at the Texans, who are a really good team, especially defensively. The Jaguars had a really surprising season last year and won the division. And then the Titans obviously have a new head coach. It's a really interesting division. The Colts finished third in the division last year, looked like they were going to win it until the end with the injuries. But yeah, they have a good team. And it'll be interesting to see if they can bounce back, like we said, and win a division, because it's very long. It's been a very long time since they've done that, in 12 years. So we'll see what happens next this season.
So yeah, the World Baseball Classic, some incredible action we've seen so far over this tournament so far. A lot of great, great baseball. Just really, really good stuff. And as we see, as we're coming up to tomorrow, as this recording, tomorrow is going to be the quarterfinal matchup, Canada versus the U.S. And
hello, darkness, my old friend. But to be honest, oh my gosh. Like, I'm worried that the U.S. is just going to, like, destroy Canada. Like, I'm expecting, like, an 11-2.
I don't know. Jameis Paxton has pitched very well for Canada. He was touching 96 versus Cuba and had, what, 2.2 solid innings? Mm-hmm. He was a bright spot for Canada. And so has Otto Lopez. He's been playing great for Canada. What's that?
Owen Casey?
Owen Casey's been unbelievable, and the Marlins fleeced the Cubs in that trade, I think, now, watching Owen Casey play. And Cal Quantrill, what a start versus Cuba the other day, too. A solid 5.5 innings from him. This is exciting, and this is the first time we're seeing this in Canadian baseball history.
Yeah. It is. It's the first time I was going to say that.
They've advanced outside of the round robin.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a good time, right? At this point, you're playing with nothing to lose, in my opinion. And honestly, I think, contrary to Tolan's point, I think it's going to be close. I don't think it's going to be that big of a blow. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the U.S. won, but I don't think you should count Canada out.
I just think talent is going to take over here. Massive talent pool for the U.S. Some of the biggest stars in Major League Baseball. In previous World Baseball Classic tournaments, the U.S. has generally outperformed Canada in head-to-head matchups, including a decisive 12-1 victory in the 2023 tournament. Canada's only previous World Baseball Classic win against the U.S. came in the inaugural 2006 Classic. Team USA, as the defending champion from 2017 and runner-up in 2023, has the experience and the expectation to perform at the highest level and advance deep in the knockout rounds. And that Italy loss, where the U.S. was down 8-0, cut it to 8-6, and then Italy held on, that's going to light a fire under the U.S.
The Italians look strong, though.
The Italians
really, really strong.
Oh, here we go, Nick.
Those espresso shots in the dugout are working. Huh?
Here we go, Nick. Go ahead.
I think it's going to be a close fight between Italy and the U.S.
How about a team like Japan?
Japan looks good, too.
Like, obviously, Japan is the defending champion.
Great team.
You know, obviously, 2 years ago, that ended, right, with Ohtani striking out Mike Trout when they were both teammates.
That's right.
The Angels, that was pretty cool there. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like Italy's played pretty well. Michael Lorenzen's been great too for them. My goodness, as a pitcher. But yeah, I feel like honestly, I got to go with, if I had to pick a team to win, I'd probably go with Japan, honestly, to repeat. Otani and those guys over there, I don't know. I feel like right now they're just in that kind of ratified era where until they lose, I can't pick against them.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
I think Japan would be the favorites right now if you look at this tournament from a whole. Just to take it back to Canada for a second, though, they had a fantastic group stage and not one that I was expecting at all.
Canada?
Canada.
Yeah, 3-1, 3-1.
I would finish, you know, I said second or third in the, and I was leaning towards third, but hey, if they finished in second, first, what am I saying? They finished in second. They finished first,
yeah. But they, 3-1. They'd be undefeated.
Yeah. They'd be undefeated,
so
exactly.
I give Canada a fighting chance versus the USA, but it's not going to be an easy matchup.
And to be honest, Italy is anything but a pushover. Like, they've shown in this tournament, like,
yeah,
they're here to play ball.
They mean business.
They mean business for sure. Right. Just think about this for a minute. The U.S. relied on Italy to get them through.
That's right.
Like, think about this for a second. Elias, did you ever have any thought that the U.S. would be watching the TV rooting for Italy to get them through?
Over Mexico? No, I never in a million years would I have imagined that. I mean, but then again, like, I feel like crazy things all happen all the time in baseball.
Sports in general.
And sports in general, yes. But yeah, I couldn't have imagined that would happen. Like, you're going to tell me the U.S. is watching the Italy-Mexico game to decide their fate. And Mexico had to win 4-1 for the U.S. to be eliminated. So they were obviously cheering for Italy to win.
Nick, thoughts on this?
Final thoughts, Nick. Close it out.
Yeah, Nick, close it out.
You know, I think there's a lot of great baseball to come. That'll do it for the end of this episode of Spirited Sports. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.